Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, and experience from hundreds, no, thousands of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted and privileged to have a conversation with Megan Garmers. Megan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Fritz.
Allow me to briefly say a couple of words to introduce you to our audience, and then we're going to explain that in more detail. You are a conference experience creator, a social media guru, where you predominantly are there to demystify the algorithm and platforms. You also give a wedding masterclass. So the topic is going to be organizing events. And again, thank you for joining us with The Brand Called You. If I look at your LinkedIn profile, if you look at you online, a couple of, I'll say, brands or ways you could describe yourself. But when people meet you, what's the first thing you say about yourself?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is probably multi-hyphenate, and it's just because there are so many different areas. That I really dip into. A lot of that is just from my natural curiosity of how the world works, how people work, and how we can all be connected. So whether that's for social media and understanding how to best utilize it, AI, we spoke on a panel about AI together and being able to understand how that's changing our world, and things that we need to consider using it for. All the way to creating experiences at conferences and wedding fairs, B2B, B2C conferences for, again, everyone, really, if they're a person, to be able to experience things and learn, grow, and connect with each other.
Okay, great. Hey, thanks for that. Now, before I ask the obvious question, how do you start off in this? I have to ask this question before I forget. A wedding masterclass. Who is that meant for? Is that for the bride and the groom? For who wants to attend a wedding masterclass? What's that about?
So one of my companies is called The Wedding Masterclass, and it's really meant for any and everyone in the wedding industry. So it is for small businesses or large businesses that service couples. So wedding suppliers, venues, hotels, travel, hospitality, everything in between, and also for couples. So we do a lot of work in bridal fashion. We do a lot of work in venue showcasing. So being able to show what can be done within a venue, it's sometimes very difficult to imagine. You walk into a blank space and to imagine things that you're going to want and that being the place you want. So we go in and help create these different experiences for couples to get to know and see and be able to meet suppliers and vendors that are going to be able to help accomplish that.
Okay. Now, is that based on personal experience?
Well, I've been in the industry for the last 25 years. Okay. And so a big part of what I've always been interested in is how people learn. My degree is in psychology. So helping understand how do people get to know and learn about new things that they want to incorporate into their life. Obviously, when they're getting married, how do you incorporate these new ideas into this amazing event, multi-day in many cases, so that it's not just for the couple and it's not just for the family, it's really for everyone. So okay. That's where being able to help a couple experience that in a way that they haven't before. That's really kind of led the charge of how we create a lot of the B2C experiences, but also on the B2B side, creating those same experiences for wedding suppliers as well.
Okay. After the fact, it becomes quite obvious that this is very relevant knowledge to obtain. But still, if you are a student in psychology, you just passed your master's, how do you then move from psychology to looking at wedding planning? I'm just curious about what made you decide, okay, that's going to be my career move.
It is quite funny. So I decided to take a gap year between getting my PhD in abnormal psychology, and then decided that I didn't want to do it. I'd become acquainted with some people and decided that that wasn't the path that I wanted to go down. It's funny when you have an idea in your head about what a certain career path is going to look like, and then when you see people who have taken that career path, and you realize what that looks like from a real life perspective, and decide that that's just not, it's not what you want for your life.
Was that an epiphany? Did you wake up at a certain day and say, now I know, or what, this is something you gradually become aware of?
It was definitely something when I had decided I needed, kind of a year to take a break. It was something during that time that I realized I didn't want to go into a full life of research, where I wasn't going to have a lot of the interpersonal connections, obviously doing very important things research does. And I love being able to do things like that. But for a full-time career, I realized that it wasn't really what I wanted. So it was a bit of a process over the course of some months. But then from there, I decided to utilize the psychology that I did have into really understanding sales and marketing. I did inside and outside sales. At one point, I was working for the Yellow Pages. So something that a lot of people today don't necessarily have an experience with, but, you know, the big, thick Yellow Page book. I did that in New York City, went door to door and sold advertising. So that was a great experience.
Yeah. May I ask you, when you decide, okay, this is not for me, did you need to make an effort to convince your surrounding parents, maybe, hey, I'm going to do something new? Or was it the other way around? Yeah, we already knew, Megan, this is going to be happening. You had to figure it out yourself. So, because I'm just asking this on behalf of the people who might be in the same situation.
Yeah, I think that a really important part is first, obviously, knowing yourself and not denying that you are who you are. A big part of who I am is, as I mentioned, I love to learn. I'm curious. I like to know new things. And I think my parents, they certainly understood that while the conventional way would be to continue down a certain path and utilize that curiosity in a certain way, they also realized that I very much made my own path in lots of ways. And so they supported me. And I think that was certainly something special, because a lot of times it's difficult when you don't understand, whether it's parents or perhaps a partner or spouse, they don't understand exactly why you would give up something that seems so sure for something else that is so uncertain. But one piece of advice I gave my son, who's 20, when he was looking at different careers and trying to figure out what to do, I told him to choose the thing that you hate the least, not the thing that you love the most, because everything that you do is going to have something that you hate in it. And you can be extremely passionate about something and love doing it, but if there is a component in that that you hate doing, at some point that is going to win out over your passion and excitement. The mundane, you know, day-to-day of what you hate is going to overpower the thing that you're so excited about right now. And so it's something that I came to find out, which drove a lot of those choices for me. And I think it rings true for a lot of things, because otherwise you end up in a career that you thought, you know, you loved at first, and then you realized it's not what you, it doesn't bring you joy. And no one should really have to be in prison to that, especially when they're able to make choices.
Yeah, no, I think that's very sound advice for people out there. Okay, Yellow Pages, selling Yellow Pages. And I mean, I understand. I've been there. I've had those type of jobs as well. But then at a certain point, you become more serious. You realize, hey, people need your advice and need your services. And that is, you could be helping to organize a wedding. Did it start actually at the business or did it start at the couple?
So when I first started, a friend of mine introduced me to the wedding industry kind of just on a whim. And so I decided, all right, that sounds great. I'll go kind of check it out. My roommate at the time, actually, she was a wedding photographer as well. And so I would go and kind of help her occasionally. And I realized that I really enjoyed being around people on their wedding day. It was obviously a very joyous occasion. And there was a lot of creativity and hard work that went into it. And there was a lot of components of things that I enjoyed and also utilized skills that I had that I was interested in doing. And so it just seemed like a natural fit to be able to do those things. I enjoy working. And so having your own business as an entrepreneur was something that was attractive to me. At that time, a lot of books about business were very specific. So it was, how do you start the next Microsoft? Or how do you, the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So, you know, how do you invest in real estate? There weren't a ton of business books. And the ones that were there were really about large corporations, or if you had money, this is how you invest it. Or if you start a franchise, this is what you do. But not a lot of business books were actually geared towards people who are starting a business, maybe not in tech, mm-hmm. maybe not in a brick and mortar shop, but are actually doing a small business. So I read all these books, lots and lots of great information, but I had to distill that into information that I could utilize for my small business, servicing people, not providing a product, but a service, and being able to pick and choose different aspects of what I learned, understand how can that be applied in the new age of email. Email yeah. was a new thing, website, eventually social media. So those were the things that, you know, it continued to excite me about all the different ways that could learn how to better a business.
Okay. And I mean, making a couple of assumptions here, but also because I mentioned you're also a social media guru, it also sounds like it's very much a learning on the job. You weren't focused on learning about social media, but it just happens to be part of getting your business off the ground. So, and you look back, hey, actually, I've gained some experience there. Let's share that.
Right. Exactly.
And I'm also hearing you, so I just wanted to check that with you. When you read all those books about setting up a big corporate, the next Microsoft, the next Amazon, whatever, and you're in the business of wanting to set up an SME or you just want to go independent, I've noticed that the language differs so much. If you're in a corporate role, you talk about the mission and the vision statement and you need a KPI. That not always applies for an SME environment.
Correct.
So have you experienced a bumpy road having to make that translation?
I didn't. And I think that it's something that I can see why it would be a bumpy road for a lot of people to make that translation or connection even. Those were things that it made sense to me on a just kind of a pure order perspective. And so being able to kind of take that and then again, translate that into, all right, so maybe you're not a large corporation, but does that mean that you don't have a purpose? So maybe what's your purpose statement? What are you trying to accomplish? You know, instead of getting hung up on the verbiage for your mission versus your vision statement, really understanding what do you offer? What are the services or the products you offer? How are you providing a unique value proposition? What does your pricing strategy look like? Your go-to-market strategy, you know, your digital marketing strategy, what's your customer experience journey look like? What tools are you utilizing? Like all of the things that, again, a big company would normally look at when you're setting up a large corporation. A lot of times small businesses it's just some person trying to make a couple extra dollars on the side. And then they decide, okay, well, I'll make it a little bigger, or the money keeps coming in. And now they're like, now what do I do? And they don't know how to grow it. They don't know how to make it a business instead of just a side hustle. So those are the things that I would get really excited about being able to share with people, because those resources weren't available to me when I started. So being able to share that with people so that they don't have to flounder was something that really brought me joy.
Great. Hey, well, and thank you for sharing that to the brand called You Audience. Now, if I go online, I look, you have quite a number of labels: speaker, strategist, conference experience creator, up to the organizing the wedding masterclass. Is there a common denominator in all those different roles where people say, look, hey, that's my real tagline?
It's a good question. I think that the biggest thing might be a connector. Just the connecting the dots, whether you're connecting the dots when it comes to content and understanding resources, connecting the dots between people, creating experiences that bring people together. Certainly connecting the dots when it comes to social media and the very big wide world of the algorithm and how do you take that and utilize it well.
Okay.
I think overall connecting those pieces together.
And how are you, what skills do you need to connect those dots in a way that your customer's happy? And I'm just thinking, coming back to the wedding planner, and if you organize a conference, you can always say, well, look, this is a pilot, next year it's going to be bigger, and the year after that it's going to be bigger. You do not want to do that with a wedding. That should be like a once in a lifetime experience.
Correct.
So you cannot run a pilot. You cannot test the waters, at least not the bride and the groom can. So
No. How
do you make certain that it is their ideal day? Mm-hmm. And what skills do you realize you have to bring to the table to really give that once in a lifetime experience?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is understanding who your audience is. So what does the couple want? What's important to them? Distilling those aspects. Mm-hmm. Is it the photos, the in-person experience? Do they need to make sure that, you know, Aunt Susan has a great time because she's really old and might not be able to experience anything else with the family after that? Like, there's all of these things that you have to understand will vary based on wedding to wedding. And I really don't see a difference between that and then creating a conference, because again, it's all about your target audience. So how do you make them happy? How do you give them what they're wanting? They're wanting you to produce something. If you don't know who they are and what they want, what's going to make them happy, you can't give that to them.
So, a conference experience creator. What are the first three questions you would ask if somebody would walk up to you? Hey, Megan, can you help? I'm going to organize a conference. What are the first three things you ask?
I'd want to know who the target audience is, who's coming to the conference. I'd want to know what they want the conference to accomplish, both on the attendee side, but also on the exhibitor side. You need both to be able to put on a conference. You know, and then lastly, how do you want that to proceed in the future? Do you want another conference later on? Is this a standalone?
Yeah.
That dictates a lot of what you're doing for your social media strategy. It dictates a lot of what you're doing as far as sponsorships and partnerships. So really having a clear idea of, you know, why are we all together and doing this allows you to be able to look forward and say, okay, based on that, then these are going to be the, you know, different aspects, the education program, the speaker set, the activities, how we're starting the day versus ending the day, social activities that go into, like, what is it, even down to the branding of the actual event. Those are all things that if you don't have a really clear understanding of who you're attracting, who you want to attract, really, you can just put on a conference and no one's going to come.
Or it's not going to make any impact.
Or no impact, right.
Do you see particular trends in conferences shifting over the years at the moment? What's changing? What's new to the game?
I definitely think that the experience aspect is becoming more popular. It's certainly been more prevalent in feedback from attendees. The hardest part for any conference organizer is really changing something when there hasn't been a total disaster that occurred the last time. We all like status quo. We all like to know exactly what to expect. And when you change something, you never know for sure, even if the audience says that's what they want. So understanding that there are going to be aspects of how do we change? I mean, it's just a human aspect. So it's like, how do we change? Where do we change these things and how do we implement them? So there is the, you know, most minimal risk possible for a disaster because of that change. But the fear is a big part of it, really, on the side of a conference organizer, when you know that you've done something before, it's been successful, wanting to make it better is a gamble.
Yeah.
And so that is something that a lot of conference organizers are starting to do, which is really exciting. They're starting to incorporate more aspects of sustainability, neurodivergence, even AI, certainly more aspects of social media, which is great. All those things are fantastic. Unfortunately, it's a little bit behind. People have been wanting these changes for a while. So it's hard for organizers to catch up, but I think they're well on their way.
I recognize the conservative mindset. I remember because every now and then I'm also have the opportunity to speak at a conference. And just before COVID hit, I mean, it would you would have in-person conferences. And if you were on screen, that didn't count. Because of COVID, all of a sudden, we were all on screen.
Right.
And I remember having a conversation online with somebody. Said, well, no, we're going to go back to normal. I said, no, I want to challenge that because I think we are experiencing something here which is going to change the way we organize a conference forever. Because we mm-hmm. now know, hey, we can do it differently. So wondering what your take on that. Would you agree with that? Or do you see a shift? We're going back to how we were used to doing things before pre-COVID.
I think it's a bit of a pendulum. Obviously, not seeing people in person to being able to see people in person. It's kind of like, you know, being held back and you just break free and people want to be able to see each other and hug each other or have a face-to-face conversation, not worry about if the screen is glitching or not, their internet connection. So yes, I definitely see that, but there is certainly a higher level of acceptance for hybrid. One of the panels at the conference that we both spoke at, we had one of the panelists that dialed in and was there remotely, and he was part of the panel. Those are things that it was just part of what the conference was offering. And one of the other panels that I moderated there, talking a lot about sustainability. So how responsible is it to fly someone from, you know, I don't know, from California to Dubai to speak at a conference for 2 hours and then fly them back? I don't know. It yeah. depends on who it is and what are the people going to get from having that person in there in person. There is a level of energy that is brought when you are at an in-person event with an in-person speaker. Doesn't mean the content can't be communicated otherwise, but that's where I think most people they haven't factored in the energy aspect of having physical beings in the same room. That's a level of experience.
I fully agree. When I organize events myself and I check with the audience and afterwards say, what do you find the most important part, meaningful part of the conference? Oh, it's the break. And then you realize it's the people you meet,
yeah.
in some cases serendipitously, which actually offer you the most benefit. So you have to organize breaks. And that's something which is very difficult to do online. So I still see the need for bringing people together there. My take. Hey, I was just a little bit on a tangent, but I'm just wondering, Megan, has your life been identified with milestones? Are there particular milestones in your life where you feel, yes, that's a singular moment or a singular activity, moment in life? Yeah, that is something I will always remember.
I would probably say milestone moments. Certainly when I decided I wasn't going to continue down the road for my PhD, that was a very big milestone moment. Having my son, very big milestone moment. Deciding to start a business from scratch, big milestone moment. Learning a lot of the different things. There was a stint where I was a CFO at a hedge fund. Those were milestone moments, working in finance, hedge funds and banks. Certainly producing large events, conferences, you know, and deciding to do those things. Those are all kind of big milestone moments when you decide to take a risk and you don't know how it's going to turn out, but you go all in. Those are big milestone moments for sure.
And with those milestones and those risks, was it a bumpy road? Have there been situations where, oh, this is actually a learning, I've learned something today?
Oh yeah, I'd say every day was a bumpy road. There were many days where there was a large part of time, certainly at the beginning of starting any business, where you're working a lot and you don't make any money. And you start to question if it's gonna work. I mean, like, can you live and pay your bills?
Okay, so once that question is raised, am I doing the right thing? And a lot of people experience this. What should you do in that case?
I think you need to really evaluate what are the consequences of the risks. So, okay, so it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
So what? So what are you going to do next? I think there's, when you're contemplating if it's not going to work out, that healthy level of, I don't know if I would call it fear, but certainly apprehension, allows for you to see things a little bit more clearly, maybe be a little bit more economical or prudent in your approach fiscally. When you're starting a business and you look at all of the options that you have in front of you, it's very easy to be like, oh, sure, I'll pay for that. And I'm going to pay for that. And I'm going to do that. And it all makes sense. And it's not to say that those things are wrong to invest in for your business, but it might not be the right time. It might not be the right amount. Maybe there's something that you can learn and do on your own before you invest $5,000 in a website. Those are like little things that, if you're not asking yourself those questions, then chances are, yeah, you could end up completely broke and needing to go find a job.
Okay. Now, in your journey you described so far, have there been role models in your life, or to rephrase that, where do you draw your inspiration from?
I think I really draw my inspiration from a lot of the kind of underdog stories. I didn't necessarily have a mentor per se. Just taking a lot, reading a lot, and understanding how these things work in the world. Whether it's you're watching a biography or reading, again, some story about how someone started their business, even like Steve Jobs in his garage. You know, there are things that can inspire you and kind of give you hope. And then you see stories where people, you know, it all goes up in flames and, okay, and they end up out. So I think it's a nice balance being able to draw from, trying to learn from other people who have tried these things.
Okay.
So if they've tried a business or they've tried to learn something new, they've done something that no one thought was possible. Understanding when do you push and when do you pull back?
Oh yeah, but indeed, be smart about what you're observing and reading, because yeah. Hewlett Packard started in the garage, Steve Jobs started in the garage. So if the idea is then, okay, I want to start a big corporate, so let's buy a garage. It's not necessarily what you want to do, I guess.
No. And obviously taking whatever you're reading or listening to or watching, taking the time into consideration, you're going to watch something on the Wright brothers. You don't need to go build a plane and you're the way they did, or, but taking something from it. One of my favorite quotes is Henry Ford saying, you know, if I ask people what they wanted, they want a faster horse. He created a car. So understanding that at some point, if there is a visionary aspect of who you are and what you do, there's going to be pushback. People aren't going to understand. But if the time is right and you're able to infiltrate that and provide a solution to their pain point, no one else can. That is where innovation happens.
Great. Hey, Megan, I'm conscious of everybody's time at the moment. I just want to end with one more question before I make my statement. I also want to share that what I like about what you discussed today alludes to a much richer background and experience than if I would look you up online. So you provide much more depth and knowledge than people might assume. That's actually pleasantly surprised me. And my question to you, my final question is, what is your advice to people who are maybe today in the same position as you were when you started out?
I would definitely say that being a good student of the world will never let you down. And so when you're reading and you're understanding and you're learning and you're meeting people, understanding how to connect those dots are going to be the lessons that you learn to be able to really guide your path, whatever that looks like, and to help you forward. I think sometimes we get, especially when you're younger, you get so excited, certainly full of zeal and energy to move forward and to make a name for yourself and to do all these things. But sometimes you go full steam in the wrong direction. So, you know, being able to really understand how can I use these things and not being afraid to make a mistake. Starting out in one business, you never know who you're going to meet that's going to lead to something else. A lot of my next steps were out of that. I didn't know I was going to meet so-and-so at that event or at that job. I didn't know that my coworker was going to ask, what are you doing this weekend? Do you want to help with the wedding? Would have never thought of that. So those are all things you don't know what the world is going to put in front of you. So being open to that, I think, is important. And then allowing yourself to be willing to connect those dots.
Great advice and great experience. Megan Garmus, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for sharing your insights and experience with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.